The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio, streaming on Facebook Live. I have to get a couple things off my chest here. I woke up this morning. This is going to be a get off my lawn. I'm an old curmudgeonly guy. Little rant here. Mm. I woke up this morning, Ursula. I looked outside. Snow was falling. It was beautiful. It was just beautiful.
Beautiful to look at from your bed.
It was It was 5:30 a.m. And I got out of bed and I looked out and it was kind of sticking on the yard and we had snow on the ground. And I was happy. I was so happy. So I went downstairs to start doing show prep. And the first thing I do in the morning, when you've been to my house many times,
yes.
the one thing that my wife and I really wanted, and we kind of redesigned the house around this. We wanted, because I'd had a wood-burning fireplace mm-hmm. in my last two homes, and I love chopping wood. But I just wanted to be able to flick a switch and have a nice fireplace. Mm-hmm. So we got the largest gas fireplace that was available.
It's beautiful.
It's just, it makes me happy. But as I flicked the switch, I was thinking, the natural gas that powers the fireplace. Right now in Olympia, there are people who want to skyrocket the cost of natural gas that comes into our homes. They want to drive it because we don't even have to turn on the furnace. The fireplace emits so much heat, radiant heat, beautiful, warm. Oh, love it. So I turn on the fire, and as I flick the switch, I think, man, they're trying to take more of my money and my listeners' money right now as I'm sitting here at 5:40 on this Thursday morning. Then I do show prep for a couple of hours, and I go down to the little shopping mall, mm-hmm. this little town center.
I went there last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It's cute.
I love it. There's an Albertsons. I love all the people who work at Albertsons. It became a Hagen for a short time, and I hated Hagen. And me and all of my neighbors, we drove Hagen right out of there because none of us shopped there. We refused to go there.
Because the prices went up.
My boneless, skinless chicken breast, which is a staple of my diet, $1.99 at Albertsons, $3.99 a pound at Hagen's. That's double. So we drove Hagen's out of there. And so now it's back to Albertsons, which I love. And right next to Albertsons is a bird shop. And I get my bird feeders there. And right next to that is a Mod Pizza. Mm-hmm. And my wife and my kids love that.
How many bird feeders are you buying?
I've got four now.
Okay.
I've got four. And then the gym where I work out most mornings. It's right there. The bookstore that has stood when the industry is being decimated. And I'm walking around and I'm realizing that Sound Transit is plotting with developers to tear all of this down despite overwhelming community opposition. And how are we on the mayor? We going to get the mayor of the town on?
Yeah, I talked to him and then he kind of
promised
me the next week and then he's been ignoring me since.
Well, he's on the Sound Transit board. And what they've done is they've gotten all of these little small town mayors on their board because they're all appointed to be lackeys. Sorry, Mr. Mayor, but we don't want the place torn down so you can put up 5-story condos and gridlock the place with more traffic and destroy the... It's one of the things that works really great in my life. I can get a Mod Pizza, I can go to Albertsons, I can work out at the gym, I can get a book.
There's a cute little chocolate shop, too.
There's a chocolate shop! Yes! There's a baseball card shop! Those don't exist anywhere. It's just a bucolic, nice little place. And the Sound Transit wants to tear it down. So everything that's warm and cozy in my life, I realized this morning, my fireplace, we've got socialists in Olympia who are working, they want to fundamentally change our lifestyle by driving prices of heating our home out of sight. And Sound Transit wants to rip down this place that works so very well. And then,
That wasn't it?
No. No, that's not what set me off. But I was, the fuse had been set as I was thinking about all of these things. So occasionally, I need a little sleep aid. The Walgreen that's closest to my house closed on February 28th. Why? Gonna build a five-story apartment building there. Now, I'm a free market capitalist. I understand that private property owners have the right to do things, but what's going on now, and this is what I can't believe. Oh, so then, I'll tell you what I can't believe in a minute.
Is it going to be like upscale apartments or?
I don't know.
I mean, is it going to be affordable housing? What is it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. It's just going
to
be a
just
building.
Trying to.
It's just not Walgreens. Okay,
so the second closest Walgreens, takes me whatever.
There's an S.
It takes me forever to get there. The intersection that you have to turn left to get in. You can only approach it from one direction. You have to sit through three or four light cycles. And at the Walgreens that I used to use, Walgreens, I knew all the pharmacists. They're lovely people. They're just wonderful. You know, one of the main pharmacists, her little boy, was a big Seahawks fan. We talk about that. So I go to this new one after waiting through three light cycles. And, first thing. So two nights ago, I see that I need a little refill of my sleep aid.
And is there only one place you can get it?
Well, okay, I'll get to that in a minute here.
I mean, you sound a little inflexible.
My wife and I are in a big, huge dispute over that. But we get our Walgreens points. No, let's just go to Rite Aid. We don't need points. So I sit through three light cycles. Oh, no, wait, before that. Two nights ago, I do the refill by scan. And it says, you got to call the pharmacy.
Oh.
But I have three refills. So I call the pharmacy, and the guy says, oh, yeah, I see it here. We'll have it for you tomorrow. That was yesterday. So this morning, I think, well, I will call them to make sure it's ready before I go through this nightmare trip to get there. So I go online, and it's kind of a, I don't like the neighborhood that the store's in either. And so I go online, I get their phone number, I call it, it's a number that's out of service, the number that's on their website for that store. So I go, okay, I'll take a chance. They said it's going to be ready yesterday. So I get there. It's not ready. We don't have it in the system. We don't know what's wrong. That never happened at the old place. And so now I've wasted 20 minutes of my day just trying to make up for the fact that this place is getting torn down for an apartment building. And now I'm seething. And that's where I started to think, is everybody blind as to what's happening here? That we're upzoning Seattle. We're going to take down single-family homes. We're going to eliminate yards. We're going to put condos everywhere. We're going to make sure that people can only be in communal areas so that Seattle can be this new socialist paradise. And we've got Sound Transit that's tearing down things that work perfectly fine and have made my neighborhood a wonderful place to live for 30 years, and they're going to destroy that. And the politicians know that the people don't want that, but it's the developers that, and Sound Transit was created for one reason and one reason only, and that was to transfer $100 billion from you and me to developers and to labor unions and to build this bogus system that is doing nothing for transportation in our region, and it's a criminal enterprise. And so now I'm just in a full froth after flipping on my natural gas fireplace and going to the place that Sound Transit's going to destroy, and then realizing that the reason all these changes are happening is so they can funnel money from us to the connected developers and property owners. And yes, I'm a free market capitalist, but you and I are getting screwed over right now because everything has been constructed to funnel money to a bunch of politically connected thieves.
This is what came of you waking up on a snowy morning?
Oh, it was so beautiful when I saw the snow, too.
You know what? I have an idea. Why don't you get your prescriptions at Costco? Because you love to go there, and that would give you extra reasons to go.
Yeah, I'm going to stand in line for 40 minutes every time I need to refill. You ever try to refill a prescription at Costco? You know how long those lines are?
Longer than the little snack.
Oh, jeez.
But you would be in your happy place, though. Filled with cherry pies.
Yeah, here's another thing.
Dory, I just don't think you don't like change.
No, that's not interesting. Because almost all change in life is for the better. Cars today are incredibly more safe. We can talk on our phones with hands-free Bluetooth connectivity. Phones have changed for the better.
But with that has come some detriment. I mean, there have been problems because of that.
Yes.
Change comes great things and not so great things.
Private market change, almost everything's better. Computers, iPads, phones, TVs. I had a 19-inch black and white when I grew up. I got a 55-inch plasma, and it cost about the same. I mean, everything that the private market drives has changed for the better. Everything that government is driving is making things worse. I truly cannot think of any aspect of life that is better for government change. And because developers and well-connected people have constructed this $100 billion enterprise to suck money out of all of us, and I get frustrated because I know that the people who listen to this show, they know what's going on. These other morons out here, they have no clue. They're just saying, we'll vote to save the planet. And everything's getting worse that government touches. Everything that private industry changes evolves for the better. So that was my morning.
Now I know why you came in and said, save it for air.
Yeah. Nicole, when I walked in, Nicole goes, what's wrong? I said, I'm saving it for the air. I'm not going to tell you. But I was furious.
I brought my blood pressure cuff, just FYI. I'm about to ask you to take
let's
it.
Let's check it. You have it?
I do.
Okay, let's go while I do the rest of the big lead. Let's strap it on. We'll have a live blood pressure reading, although we should have taken it about a minute ago. I think I'm starting to settle down
you
already.
You just vented. Should be good now.
I'm serious, though. I get so frustrated at how blind people around here are to what has been constructed by a one-party government and labor unions and the connected developers to make our lives worse. The stuff that I complain about on a usual basis, you know, is government. But the things that work really well in my life, my home, I mean, I'm going to move. If Sound Transit destroys my neighborhood, I don't ever want to move. My wife and I, we designed our house. We didn't know what we were doing, but it turned out exactly as we envisioned and exactly as we wanted. I don't ever want to move. I want to die in that house. It's impossible to love a home any more than I love my house. But I'm going to move if Sound Transit comes in and destroys our neighborhood. I'm not going to continue to put up with the sheep that are being led by the crooks. And in fact, I had a thought. This will shock you, Nicole, because can you imagine me ever being a political activist off the air?
No.
As I was driving in, I was thinking I might organize a rally. I might try to fill that town center that Sound Transit wants to destroy. I might try to fill it shoulder to shoulder with people and dare the mayor and the city council to come out and say, yeah, we're going to let Sound Transit fundamentally change the entire character of where all of you live. I seriously could, for the first time in my life, see myself getting in. I always feel like, no, I can do it on the air. I can accomplish my goals on the radio, far better than I could by, you know, walking with leaflets. But I got to do something. And people have to start waking up. Yes, I'm a free market capitalist, but we got crooks in collusion against us right now. Boy, that snow was pretty this morning. I'll tell you that right now. Did I even start the big lead?
I don't think so, but we're about done anyway.
Yeah, okay. We'll tell you what. A Dory Monson show exclusive. There is a potentially gigantic lawsuit that has just been filed against Boeing because of that crash. And I got really deep into the details of why that crash happened. I was tipped off that this lawsuit was going to drop today. And so I was able to do a lot of research on this last night. And this could be really bad for Boeing. And I know we got a lot of Boeing workers who listen to our show. And we're going to talk to the attorney who is filing this lawsuit. We will do that exclusively next here on the Dory Monson Show. A lawsuit has been filed today in King County Court that has sent shockwaves through the aviation world in general and Boeing in particular, because Boeing is the defendant accused of installing a system on an airplane that led to the death of 189 people in Indonesia. The law firm that is filing this lawsuit is the Herman Law Group. Charles Herman joins us here on Cairo Radio. Charles, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Good morning to you, Dory.
So let's go over the basics. I'm sure the people have a vague recollection. This crash happened on October 29th last year. It was a plane taking off from Jakarta, Indonesia. And tell me a little bit of what happened in those minutes after takeoff.
Well, the plane was immediately experiencing a problem in its guidance systems, the flight control systems. And what it amounts to is that the attitude of the plane, whether it's flying flat or whether it's flying climbing or descending, is read by what they call an angle of attack sensor. That sensor failed, and it fed erroneous information into another computer system called the MCAS. It read that the plane was climbing too steep and nearing the risk of a stall, which it wasn't, but that's what the reading was. And then this MCAS system started forcing the nose of the plane down, and ultimately the pilots lost the struggle with it, and it crashed into the sea, killing all 189 people on board.
So let me just kind of read this back to you to make sure I'm understanding it and my listeners. So faulty data said the nose was pointed up too high. The pilots or this other system kicked in to lower the nose when it didn't actually need to be lowered. And then the pilots are in a tug of war with this automated system for the attitude of the plane. Is that a fair capsulization?
You said it better than I did, Dory.
Okay. All right. So and I have some quotes in your press release, Charles. Captain Mike Michaelis, chairman of the Safety Committee for the Allied Pilots Association, he told the Wall Street Journal, "It's asinine for them to put a system on an airplane and not tell the pilots who are operating the airplane, especially when it deals with flight controls." So no pilots worldwide were notified about this system that was installed on this 737 MAX?
That's essentially correct, and that's sort of part two of the lawsuit. Part one was the failure of the brand new plane, the equipment on the brand new plane. Part two is they didn't tell or inform the pilots that this new system was even on the plane. When these pilots in the doom flight met this problem, they had no idea what they were fighting. Nothing in the manual, nothing in the way of warning or instructions or even the existence of this system. And immediately after the crash, just a matter of 9 days later, the FAA ordered Boeing to put it into the manuals and to distribute it worldwide to everybody, all airlines and pilots who had flying this new 737 MAX.
So I want to make sure I understand this, Charles. So if the pilots had known of the existence of this system, they could have cut it off and then taken manual control of the flight?
Yes, no question. They could have, whether, you know, they just couldn't get there in their minds as to what they were fighting, because there were buttons and switches there that they could have engaged that would have shut it off. Another problem is that under the old system, with the earlier versions of the 737, when the pilots pulled back on the yoke, the control column, the stick, if you will, it automatically shut that kind of thing off, any electrical or automatic control. That no longer existed. So that's what these pilots were doing, was trying to fight it with pulling back on the yoke. And it didn't work, obviously.
Yeah. You have another quote in your press release. The pilots union president at Southwest Airlines, John Weeks, he simply said, "We're pissed that Boeing didn't tell the companies and the pilots didn't get notice." I remember, Charles, 2017, there were no commercial air fatalities worldwide. And, of course, this one ended that streak in October of 2018. But I tell you what, this is a glaring example of why we need human pilots. Because there's been talk that, you know, it's someday planes will fly themselves and we won't need pilots. But when you have a malfunction like this, and if the pilots could have cut it off, taken manual control, they could have saved those 189 lives.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And I think sometimes the reliance upon new technology is ill-placed. And I agree with you completely that you need the human being involved. You know, one of the other criticisms of the system as designed by Boeing was that there was no backup, no redundancy, no fail-safe. Either this thing worked or it didn't work. And if it didn't work, it, you know, it did what it did in this accident and caused the crash.
Okay. As the attorney for the families of 17 of the victims on this flight, you obviously have to anticipate what the defense would be. What in the world would Boeing's defense be about this if the FAA days later said, you got to add this to the manual, you have to notify people? What in the world will Boeing's defense be?
Well, they their position, and they've said so in the press, is that there were more general instructions that, you know, if the pilots had actually followed a particular checklist, that they could have gotten to shutting these off, the buttons on it that would shut this MCAS off. And that's what they're saying, that it was already in there, even though it didn't mention this particular system, that when they had these problems generally working through a checklist, that they could have gotten to the cutoff buttons that were necessary to shut the computer system off.
Okay.
That's their defense.
I know that there are a lot of men and women at Boeing who listen to my show, and I've, you know, they've told me really nice things about, you know, my show echoing through the big old warehouses starting at noon. There are a lot of them are listening right now. What's your message to the men and women at Boeing? Because this is a lawsuit that, you know, could have some pretty drastic impact on the company and their financials and all of that. What's your message to all the Boeing people who live and work in our area here?
Well, let me say that as a youngster, I worked at Boeing at the Missile Production Center. So I have a favorable attitude toward Boeing generally. But I think you've already made one of the points is that we can't get to the point where we let the machinery and the technology take over. I think people are getting generally used to the idea that even though this a lot of technology serves us well, it doesn't always work. And there's where you have to have the human being at the wheel and capable of controlling the aircraft and actually flying the plane. So that's I don't see this as a discredit to anybody who is working at Boeing other than a mistake has been made in the design
right.
and the information that was handed out. Dory, one thing, I've handled these kind of air crashes and many of them over the years, and the one thing that I see as a common thread through most of them is that in order to maintain profit in a very competitive market, a lot of times it's safety measures that are cut. And here Boeing advertised that this plane wouldn't require extensive training and that the airlines who are purchasing these new models would save millions of dollars because they wouldn't have to retrain the pilots, they wouldn't have to put them in flight simulators and so on and so forth.
Right.
It was just a very short little thing given to them, and that's why they didn't tell and they didn't inform and they didn't see a need to for the pilots to understand what was actually happening
no.
on the plane. And I think it's a huge mistake, and that mistake is driven by market forces trying to make the plane more competitive against Airbus at a lower price,
okay, got
at
it.
Least as far as training.
Charles, I only have seconds remaining. What's Boeing's exposure here? I mean, it's your 17 plane ifs. There are 172 other people who died in this crash. What's Boeing's financial exposure to this?
Well, these kind of wrongful deaths generally average somewhere around $2 to $3 million. It depends on the situation of an individual victim, but if they compensated everybody at that level, they'd be into $50 million or so, which would be about the price of one plane.
Well, no, wait a second.
5,000 of them.
I mean, $2 to $3 million per person, 189 people. Wouldn't that be more like hundreds of millions of dollars? Wouldn't that be more like $400 million?
You have to figure that a great many people are settling with Lion Air over in Indonesia and
okay.
aren't bringing suits. So it's my math was a little off there,
okay.
that you're going to get down to about half of them. Some of them are going to be resolved in Indonesia. Some of them are going to be resolved in the United States. There's no question that the amount of compensation awarded in the United States is significantly more.
Okay, got
than,
it.
And what I was thinking about is my 17 cases,
okay.
not the whole 189.
Okay. I got you. All right. Charles Herman, Herman Law Group, they filed this lawsuit against Boeing. I appreciate you coming on with me today.
Very welcome. Thank you, Dory.
All right. Love to hear your thoughts on this. I'd love to hear if you're a Boeing worker. What do you think about all of this? Because I know the pride that Boeing workers have in the product they put out. And this has to be devastating for you, too. You can text me. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. So in my wild, unhinged rant at the beginning of the show, I was talking about how, you know, I don't understand the humanity of the Democrats in control in Olympia. That They are adding hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars to the average family's tax bill with their unchecked spending this legislative session. And nationally, now that the Dems have gotten control of the House, I saw a great tweet this morning by Dan Gaynor, one of the guys I follow. Democrats in the last month, in blackface, in KKK outfit, calling the most affluent African-American area in the U.S. an N-word district, endorsing open borders, pro-baby murder, openly anti-Semitic, refusing to condemn anti-Semitism, the media. Trump is divisive. It's true. You know, the way the media covers things, most in the media. But, you know, I had another example from the New York Times that I shared with you yesterday. And I was looking at all of these news stories. Ilhan Omar, the raging anti-Semite, calls for defunding DHS. Let's see. Advocate hatred toward Israel. Here's a story at The Hill about how Democrats are openly pushing for open borders. It's crazy. Christians, you know, Joe Biden called Mike Pence a decent man. And the left went unhinged. You can't call him a decent man. And the thing that's so weird is Trump's a womanizer. He cheats on his wife. Mike Pence says, I won't even have a dinner one-on-one with a woman unless my wife is, you know, there. I won't ever be alone with a woman. Pence is one of those crazy Christians. It's like no matter which end of the spectrum, Trump is a womanizer. They hate him for it. Pence is strictly a faithful Christian, one woman man. They hate him for that. Let's see, what else are we hating on? How about the president? He was kind of funny. He had Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, in a meeting yesterday, and Apple is building a little more and more stuff in the U.S. They were outsourcing so much of it to China, but they're doing more in the United States. And President Trump tried praising Tim Cook of Apple for that. It just came out a little wrong.
Up the labor forces, because we have to. We have so many companies coming in. People like Tim, you're expanding all over and doing things that I really wanted you to do right from the beginning. I used to say, Tim, you got to start doing it over here. And you really have. I mean, you've really put a big investment in our country. We appreciate it very much, Tim Apple. But we're opening it up.
Right there. That's where they're all jumping all over Trump because he called him Tim Apple instead of Tim Cook. And I don't even know if he was saying just his first name. And
maybe there should have been a comma there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tim and Apple.
Yeah. So everybody's goofing on Trump for that.
Our country, we appreciate it very much, Tim Apple. But
no, he probably did mean to say Tim Cook. But it's, of all the things for, and I saw that on every cable news channel. They're all, oh, listen to the president. He doesn't even know the guy's last name. I did see a good tweet. That is so disrespectful to the former Apples who have run the company. But
Tim changed his Twitter name to Tim, and then I believe it's a picture of an apple. My computer doesn't work. But
yeah, he's Tim Apple now. Mm-hmm. Big deal. Okay, I got a lot more to do. We are going to talk. Did you hear about that Uber driver who was passing out a funny menu? And it is unbelievable how this has taken off like wildfire. He's going to join us at 1:30 this afternoon, and the Fastest 15 is next.